Thank you. My name is Emily Heaton, and I'm standing in for Nick Boyle. No, I'm sorry. I didn't tell you in advance. So save your hard questions for Nick. I am here and really grateful to speak to this audience today because I want to just raise something that happened to us that we weren't expecting and get your feedback on it. Similar to the last speaker, I'm grateful for your thoughts on a phenomenon we observed, and I'm looking for help in explaining it, or actually how to look at it better. And this should be a fairly quick talk, maybe get us back on time before the break, but I want to thank Dr. Nick Borsba, obviously, who did this work for his PhD with me, and then also Fernando Miguez, who I see in the audience from Iowa State University, and Frank Dolman at Monsanto. So how many of you are familiar with Miscanthus giganteus? Just a quick hand. Okay, so it's a perennial rhizomatous C4 grass. It's not native to the U.S. The crop that's used widely in the U.S. now and in Europe is a sterile triploid. So it does not make seed. And so what we have then in the field are large clonal plantations. There's not that much of this crop established around the world, but we do have our clonal fields. And so Nick looked into that, a little bit of the clonal nature and varying how you might grow Miscanthus in a couple of papers. And while we did, we found some weird things that I want to talk to you about. But Miscanthus giganteus generally is known as being interesting because it seems to maintain productivity at cool temperatures in a way that's unique for C4 species. And this has been shown to be related to maintaining levels of PPDK, a key C4 photosynthetic enzyme, at cool temperatures. So this is what we see that's weird. So what we're observing is delayed senescence in first-year plantations of Miscanthus. So what we have is a crop species that takes usually 3 years to mature. You plant it from rhizomes in the first year. You don't normally harvest a first-year crop here on the left. This is a second-year crop, and then you achieve ceiling yields typically in the third year, which are then maintained for the 20 to 30-year lifetime of the stand. So this has been observed anecdotally in the literature and measured qualitatively in the literature. And what's important for that, I think, for us to think about here is how this relates to nutrient cycling and then to stand or overwinter survival after the first year of planting of this crop. So here's the hypothesis that we're kind of working from, that when we observe delayed senescence in the first year of this crop that I'm showing here is a young stand that's, you see green leaves all the way down through the canopy. So we're not getting what we hypothesized to be the internal nutrient cycling, particularly of nitrogen, that allows nitrogen from leaf tissue to be remobilized to the perinating rhizome tissue for the winter. So reduced nutrients in the rhizome could conceivably lead to increased overwintering losses because there's not enough energy for that crop to regrow in the spring. And this is a picture of Nick very unhappy after he planted a big field of Miscanthus in 1 year and he had one or two plants that lived the following year. So this drove him to be a little bit interested in this question for his work. This crop is extremely expensive to establish, about $1,000 for an acre, so you can scale that up, $2,500 a hectare. But averaged over the lifetime of a stand, that's reasonable, a 20 to 30 year lifetime for a stand. But early plantations where we had big winter mortality quickly spoil a farmer's enthusiasm for the crop to plant this again if you have, in this case, roughly 85 to 90% winter losses in a field. They're not going to try that twice. So this is again showing just that first year stand, and that contrasts to a field directly adjacent to it, a second year stand on the same date, roughly. And so here you see senescence in the lower leaf tissue, but it's not just because of shading. If you look at the stand as a whole, the whole thing is getting yellower. It seems like nutrient remobilization that you would expect from a perennial species is occurring. So as I mentioned, this has been qualitatively assessed in the literature through greenness indices. Paul Robeson's work from Ivers in Wales is particularly nice, but there was never any sort of attempt to explain it or to even quantify it to try to look at significant differences. And importantly, it had never been done in stands growing side by side, so the effect of stand age is always confounded with the growing season of the year. So what we did is we took some side-by-side fields that Nick has. We had 8 replications within each of these fields of 8 plots within each field for each stand age, and we looked at net assimilation rate as well as photosystem 2 efficiency just through typical Likert 6400 output. And we also looked at leaf nitrogen concentrations. So we looked at two plants per plot, upper canopy sunlit leaves during the time of solar noon, and we set the cuvette conditions to mimic the ambient conditions in respect to temperature and radiation as well as humidity. We started our measurements doing this twice a week in the period that we thought was physiologically relevant, so late summer to the first killing frost. And I'll show you, I think we missed a little bit of that important period in one of our years. So now I'm going to show you just some quick data. This you're going to see some similar graphs here. It's CO2 assimilation rate here, and the top panel with leaf temperature daily average air temperature on the bottom. And this is over the period 2010, and then again 2011 for late summer, early fall. So I want to point out, first of all, that first year stands are in square symbols, and second year stands are in circles. In the 2010, those are the only two stand ages we had, and then in 2011, those first-year plants are now second-year plants, the second-year plants are now third-year plants, and we have a new cohort of first-year plants. So if we look at the places where we start to see differences between those stand ages, in 2010, the year was a mild fall. We didn't really see big differences between the treatments. But then in 2011, we had a little bit more of a rapid transition to cool temperatures, and we'd had some cool temperatures before actually started taking measurements. First year stands were starting to look a little bit different than second year plant stands, and then second year stands were looking different from third year stands. And this was really brought out after we had a cold shock, as it were, so getting down to around 10 degrees Celsius. We start to see really some bigger differences between our stand age points. And then interestingly, that relationship is expanded after, again, some cool temperatures. So what is interesting to me here is that in some cases it seems like the first year plants rebound more quickly than the second and third year plants do. And this is what has been shown in growth chamber work with Gigantea. So there's been some nice work out of the University of Illinois looking at juvenile plants in growth chambers, grown at cool temperatures and grown at warm temperatures, showing that Miscanthus grown at cool temperatures can have the same sort of photosynthetic rates once it's moved to warm temperatures that plants grown in warm temperatures had. So the idea being that if you have a cool day and then it warms up, these plants are rapidly able to take advantage of that, those good growing conditions, and thus overall collect more solar energy than for instance, in those cases, than maize would. What we're showing here is maybe that's limited to juvenile plants, and that's a little bit more apparent when we look at photosystem 2 efficiency, again, sort of the same separation of first-year plants and then second and third-year plants following these cool temperatures around 10 degrees Celsius. And again, those differences become stronger over time, but the first-year plants really starting to show that they still can rebound in warm days, whereas the second-year plants and then even the third-year plants, they don't even try to rebound when the temperatures warm back up again. Leaf nitrogen showed a sort of similar story. So here is leaf nitrogen concentrations for the first year plants over the season. And there's no decline. There's no decline in leaf nitrogen concentrations with the onset of fall and first year plants. But there is in second year plants. And this is typical of what we'd expect at this time of year. In 2011, I think we missed the boat. Leaf nitrogen concentrations had already started to separate, and this is in line with previous work on Gigantea showing that nitrogen concentrations really start to drop around July, and as the crop is diluted with more growth, and then as nutrient remobilization begins to occur. But these concentrations, I think, sort of interestingly, of around 1.7% leaf nitrogen, that's what we see in Miscanthus growing in mature Miscanthus growing in June. So the first-year plants have similar concentrations to mature plants just earlier in the season, and these concentrations overall are quite in line with work that we've seen in other locations. So I think our data is not anomalous. I think we just kind of missed the separation. But again, first-year plants maintaining their leaf nitrogen, whereas second- and third-year plants are not, and that difference drives over time. So the way we're interpreting this is simply that we are able to actually see now quantitatively and statistically different behavior between stands of different ages. And this is all clonal material, so this is just strange to me, and I would be grateful for your thoughts. Our working hypothesis is just that the photosynthetic machinery is not shutting down in early plants, as particularly evidenced by the fact that photosynthetic performance rebounds when temperatures warm in first year but not later plants. So it's like the crop is acclimating or learning over time. And so perhaps Giganteus could be an interesting model system to study senescence. If you look at the senescence literature, and again thinking big of whole plant senescence, not programmed cell death, but all that work is typically done on annual species or in woody perennials, C3 woody perennials. And now that C4 perennials are becoming more interesting, particularly for biofuels work, now perhaps we have a clonal system, in which we can investigate this phenomenon without genotypic variability to kind of understand what mechanism might be driving this or what are the cues that might be driving this. And of course, we'd like to look into this in more detail and actually follow this up with some more supporting evidence. But understanding exactly what are the valuable measurements to take and how to interpret those is something I'd be interested in learning more from this community. So this is why Nick isn't here. Nick has a daughter and a new son that are keeping him quite busy. But I'll take any questions, although we're late for the break, so most of you probably want to get out of here, and I have a flight to catch, so maybe a quick question. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
Question one. I've seen in Florida transplants in the spa of St. Augustine will actually stay greener the first winter. This is a C4
perennial
material. Talk to some of the turf folks.
Thank you. I get the impression that this resonates with a lot of people as, huh, that's weird, we saw that too and didn't think much more about it. The biomass does exactly what we would normally expect it to do. It keeps progressing with time. So we didn't see any difference between, so if you mean the plants that were first-year plants in 2010 and the plants that were first-year plants in 2011, they had similar biomass productivity. So the plants between the cohorts looked quite similar and behaved quite similarly.
When you measure the genetic rate, let's say, you measure at the same size plant of the first year?
The stands were quite homogenous. Because it's clonal material and we live in Iowa where soils are beautiful, the stands come out quite even. So yes, we tried to control for as much variability within those plants as possible. Thank you.